This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And welcome to the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Matt Caraccio, and welcome to another edition of the Summer Seminar Series, where our goal is to kind of take you closer to the game and give you some new ideas, some new thoughts, some new insights that maybe you're thinking about, or maybe that can make you feel more connected to what you're seeing on Saturday and Sunday. And the theme for this particular Seminar Series, as I've said in the past, is the player problem solver paradigm. And I am just absolutely ecstatic to welcome in somebody that I would say has changed my lens as much as any other professional in the business. I'm here to welcome the head coach of Victory Christian, author of the R4 What is Open, Adapt or Die, or From Headset to Helmet. I am bringing in Coach Dub Maddox, the co-owner of National Football Academies. Coach Maddox, thank you so much for joining us on the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast for this really, really important series this summer.
Thanks, Matt. I'm honored to be here.
So, Coach, I just wanted to kind of bring you in and ask you, as we kind of begin our discussion, I'm going to keep it really simple for our listeners and for you, so that way you can kind of just muse on the topic and go wherever you feel so inclined. How is it that you see the problems on the field that face players and coaches? Is there a way that you've come to kind of understand and kind of communicate those problems in a way that you've seen being really helpful for your daily tasks as a coach, and even for those that are part of your staff? How have you begun to see the problems on the field through those lenses?
Well, it really starts with frames of reference, and that's, I think, a thing that many coaches and fans, for that matter, and players are lacking. And when I started coaching football, I'm actually entering my 20th year coaching. When I remember my first year in that first staff meeting, I was really lost as a young coach, because coaches were not only using different frames of reference, they were viewing the game from their own perspective. So you might have a coach that's been coaching for 25 years, and a coach that's been coaching for 10, a coach that's been coaching for 5, myself, who was a rookie coach, and everyone's viewing the game through their own perspective. And I think that creates a lot of confusion when you're using different frames of reference and different experiences that you may have had in different offenses or defenses to kind of try to communicate space. And really, football is all about space. We have to, the offense wants to create space. The defense wants to cover all space. And that's really where the game is played. And so how we go about defining space and communicating space gets really confusing when you have different frames of reference and different languages to communicate that. So really, that's what R4 is. It's an operating system that works from consistent frames of reference with a common language. And once you establish that, acceleration of decision-making occurs much more rapidly. And it took me about 5 to 10 years to really work through the meanings of how coaches communicated different fronts and coverages. And what I found was that many times they were communicating the same front or coverage, but they used different terms and different ways to get there. So that's what kind of set us down the road to try to create R4 was I needed a better process and a better system to help explain this, not only to myself, but just to communicate it to my players. Because, you know, in high school, we have guys for 1, 2, 3 years, and we have a limited amount of time to teach the game. So we needed a way to accelerate all that. And that's what R4 does.
You know, and I have to kind of go back to a couple of things that you just said, because I think they were really poignant. I think the first thing that you said that really intrigued me was that you looked at it as a space game. And I'm just curious, where does time and space fit together in terms of the way you coach, the way R4 communicates the game itself to both players and to coaches? Because where does that kind of space and time sequence fit in terms of training, understanding, and articulating kind of essentially what your last book was about, which is what's open?
Right. And I think that's the question that you have from an offense perspective, and even a defensive for that matter, is we've got to define open. In my first year as a quarterback coach, that was the question that I just really couldn't frame out for my quarterback. And I really went on a journey to try to figure out the best way to teach these methods. And I really sought out a lot of great coaches at higher levels in the professional realm and in the college realm. And what I found was is they really couldn't explain it either. In fact, I remember being in one meeting room during spring ball, and I was talking to a very high-profile offensive coordinator, written a ton of books on the West Coast passing game. And I was really excited because I thought, I'm finally going to get my answer to know what open is. How does he teach his quarterback to know what open is? So he's talking about all these progressions, and I just stopped him and said, Coach, I go, how do you teach your quarterback to know what open is? And he kind of was stumped by the question, and he kind of paused for 10 seconds and he looked at me and he said, well, he just knows. And I think that's, you know, when you're coaching at a higher level and you're, you know, dealing with four and five star athletes or professional players for that matter, you know, that might be enough. You know, I can recruit a guy that just knows. And if he doesn't, I can replace him with another guy that intuitively knows that. But at the high school realm, I can't just get by with that year in and year out. I have to be able to get my quarterback seeing space the same way. And so that's really where we had to kind of deconstruct of just this process of space. And really it starts with the limits of football. You have to understand the limits that you're playing the game within. Just for example, if I'm going to paint a picture, I got to know the limits that I'm dealing with. The size of my canvas is a limit. The colors I'm using is a limit. The type of picture I'm trying to draw, there's limits to that. So as a coach and as a player and as a fan, we have to understand the limits of the game, and that's space, time, and talent. Those are the three limits. And so when I understand what those limits are, I can now create a better process to see the reality of what the best decision to make and how to navigate where the ball should go.
So, you know what, and I think you said a lot of impressive things there, specifically going back to intuition and talking about this intuitive understanding. You talk really eloquently in your book about this idea that intuition is not really something that we do a great job in our communities really communicating, and it was really kind of the impetus, it seems, for a lot of what you were doing, as you just explained. My question to you is that when you look at intuition and you begin to try to unpack that, can you take us a little bit more in depth maybe into how you began to unpack that in terms of communicating things on the field? You talked about limits. You talked about maybe the task that a player is actually being assigned to kind of unpack when they're actually running a play. Where do those kind of limits exist? And what have you seen in terms of your development? Because I know R4 is always developing, and I think that's what's so incredible about R4. It is always developing. If you're not familiar with the R4 system, I can't recommend it highly enough. I am a subscriber to Coach Maddox's system and a believer, because he's always increasing and tweaking and changing what things do and mean. So do you think you can take us a little inside that kind of journey into what intuition was on the field for players?
Yeah, so I think when you look at some of the greatest, we'll just look at from the quarterback's eyes first, because that's really where this front door of the system began. And, you know, great quarterbacks have a natural ability, this intuitive process just genetically built within them. But even the best, the ones that have this intuitive ability to process space, they still can accelerate their ability to pattern read faster if they understand the frames of reference that is required to process space. So intuition is nothing more than pattern recognition. And in the absence of frames of reference, you can't accelerate and improve on intuition. So the first thing that we had to do is we had to build these frames of reference for our coaching staff and our players to communicate space properly. And one of the concepts that we used to kind of frame this idea out was the FedEx logo. And the FedEx logo is considered to be one of the best marketing logos in history. And it was created in 1994 by Lyndon Leader. And the beauty of the FedEx logo is, if you're not familiar with it, is there's a hidden arrow that's built within the FedEx word. And between the E and the X of the FedEx logo, there's an arrow that forms between the E and the X. And once you know that arrow's there and it's created by the outline of the E and the X, your eyes go to that naturally every time you see it. So every time I see a FedEx on a plane or a truck or a shirt, my eyes immediately go to what they call the negative space. And that's the design concept of that logo. So negative space, you may see it in other TV logos. It's the ability to see that picture within the picture, and it's always hidden. And so really that's what great coaches and great players have, this ability to see the hidden space that others can't see. And you can only see that when you outline space in a more clear, defined way. So what we developed was what we call the HALO. And the HALO is an acronym that defines the four key frames of reference to see the football field. So the H is for the hard deck line. And the hard deck is just a horizontal line that exists 7 yards is the starting point for it from the line of scrimmage. And that separates vertical space from flat space. So that's a key frame of reference that quarterbacks need to know how the defense is playing in relation to that line. Now, we don't have that line clearly drawn out when we watch film or we're on the field, but typically the back judge, the umpire, will stand around 7 to 8 yards. So once we see where that umpire is, our quarterbacks now can view the reality of this space vertically in the flat space. They can see where those defenders are vertically in relation to that line. So it's an accelerator to help process when that vertical space is what we call uncapped or in fact capped. The next letter in the HALO is A, and that stands for the apex line. That's the midpoint between the end man on the line of scrimmage and the next eligible receiver. And so what that does is that separates run box space from outside flat tube space. And so how those linebackers are positioned in relation to the apex line is an accelerator to me as a quarterback to know if the run box is in fact loaded or if the flat space is uncapped. The third letter in the HALO is the line of center. And that line of center is an imaginary line that goes through the center, and that divides the formation into two halves. And so that helps me determine where the man advantage is actually in my favor or in the defense's favor. And man advantage is a critical component to understand to make sure that you're attacking space that's into your number's advantage or how you neutralize that space back. And then the last letter of the HALO is the O, and that's for the outside space. And that's flat tube space. And that space is critical to know how to attack because that space has both run and route properties. I can throw flat routes or quick game concepts out there if it's in fact uncapped. I can also attack outside space with sweep schemes or jet sweep schemes with run plays as well. So once the HALO is overlaid onto a formation, we can now determine where bubbles of space are or where the man advantage is in our favor. So we can make sure as coaches, we're calling concepts that attack the most favorable space. So that's really the generic, real quick, just the key frames of reference we use. Now there's more we use post-snap, but that's kind of the pre-snap process that we use to kind of break the field down. And once you overlay the HALO, you actually have five vertical tubes that are available above the hard deck. And those vertical tubes are, we break them down into five because in American football, you can release five eligible receivers downfield if in fact you want to release all five. So that's the limits that we have to attack vertically with receivers. If I want to, the maximum amount of guys I can send vertically is five. So the defense has to account for those five tubes and determine, do they want to cap all five, which they rarely do, or do they want to gain man advantage elsewhere? So once I lay the HALO over the formation, that gives me 15 spaces that the defense has to defend. And that's a limit. And so if the defense has 15 spaces to defend on any given formation, but they only have 11 defenders, 15 minus 11 is four. So that gives me at a minimum four bubbles of space advantage that I can attack on any given formation. So that's kind of where we start our game planning process and our teaching process with quarterbacks is we want to know where those four bubbles of space are and can we attack those. And if we can't, now we have to scheme space advantage elsewhere with better play design. And so that's kind of how the game planning process works and how we teach quarterbacks visually on to have an awareness of where the advantage is.
I think what's so brilliant about that is I think that what's nice is you go back to this idea of a common language. And I think that was one of the biggest successes in R4 from my perspective as I started to read a lot of the work that you have done over the last several years is by creating that common language, you have a communication system that's more seamless and it allows you to have these discussions probably with a richer degree of understanding exchanged between yourself, the coach, and the player themselves. I was wondering if I could kind of read a quote from What Is Open just to get a little bit of an understanding. And this is a quote basically where you're talking a little bit about the non-negotiables and how the non-negotiables play a role here. Because I'm going to ask you a trick question, not a trick question per se, as in something awkward, but more or less something maybe you experience as a coach and maybe how the R4, although an awesome kind of communication system, is sometimes maybe individualized to a particular player or set of players depending upon their capabilities. Like you said, talent is something that plays a role. So it says it is a process that identifies a pattern of non-negotiables in a given situation to inform the user of the best decision to make based on probabilities of factual, explicit knowledge and heuristic or implicit knowledge. And it basically goes on to talk about if, then, and else statements, which is kind of this broad-based terminology that ends up leading us to the rhythm, the read, the rush, and the release. My question to you, Coach, is how do you account sometimes in practice? Because I'm sure you're going to get a couple of cowboys in there who are ready to kind of throw that ball. Like, listen, Coach, I know it's not the read route. I should be moving on. Where do you think the comfort level between individual players and that talent aspect comes into play in terms of executing the R4? Is that something that is sometimes creates friction, or do you think it's just, it is harmonious? Because when we can have this clear communication idea between us, really there's never friction. It's more understanding that we're seeking.
Yeah, I think what it does, and a lot of coaches try to teach their perspective on space based on, they try to really make it super simple, and they come along with it with an implicit approach. So coaches want to follow the KISS method all the time, keep it simple. So, for example, when teaching the quarterback how to read open space, they say, just throw to grass. And that was a common phrase that I used early on in my coaching career. But what I found was, is how much grass is really needed to be open? And there's going to be a lot of times, especially when you're at the highest level, there's not a lot of grass out there. But is, in fact, that receiver still open? So we had to create layers to this open concept. And what we use is this interface of the CAP. And the CAP is an acronym that allows us to really define if, in fact, route space is open or it is, in fact, covered. So, for example, before I had the CAP process for my quarterback, and I would call the post concept, he would drop back, and it didn't matter if it was open or not. It could be triple covered, but that quarterback, he's throwing the post because the coach finally called the post play, right? So he's dropping back, and he's letting the post fly no matter what. It could be triple covered. And he's coming to the line, back to the sideline after he throws an interception, and I'm upset. I'm like, well, why'd you throw the post? It was covered. And he goes, no, it was open. Well, who's right? In the absence of clear a definition of open, then the quarterback is right because he has the ball in his hand. And so I it didn't matter what I thought. And so I needed a better way, a better method on Saturday after a game to sit with him in the film room and take him through a sequential process to, in fact, teach him that that route was actually capped. And so CAP stands for three things. It stands for coverage, which is the horizontal and vertical position, dominant position of a defender pre-snap. So we have to have a pre-snap process that determines if a route space is capped or uncapped. And that's the first layer. Because just because a route is capped pre-snap doesn't mean it's going to be capped post-snap because things change. We have to have the ability to process movement post-snap. And that's the biggest differentiator in average quarterbacks and great ones. For example, Peyton Manning, he still owns the single season interception record as a rookie. I think he had 29 interceptions as a rookie. Okay, Peyton Manning, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. And he learned through each one of those 29 interceptions, he in fact learned through those failures, okay, well, that is in fact capped or uncapped. He learned through those failures. The problem is that most quarterbacks don't have the luxury to throw 29 interceptions to learn from all those failures. So what we need is a process that informs those failures faster so we don't make as many mistakes. And that is, with that tool, we're able to use that with the CAP. So for example, my quarterback, let's say, drops back and throws the post in triple coverage. And I tell him, hey, that was capped. Now I can sit there and watch film, and we can look at it pre-snap. Was that defender over and inside? Yes, that's capped. Well, now let's look at the second layer of cap. That's for the hip angle. And as we drop back on the drop and we look at the angles of the hips of the defenders, the angle of the hips defines the space that he can close upon at that moment in time. And there's four hip angles. A defender can have a full hip angle turned directly downfield, and that means he can close on vertical space. So that would confirm that that route is capped. If he's over and inside and he has a full hip angle on the drop, that route is capped. If the hips are square, he can now only close on horizontal space in front. So that route could now be uncapped on the drop. So for example, let's say we're throwing to an X receiver to the left on a post route. The defender is over and inside pre-snap, but on the drop, that defender has a square hip angle. And if I throw at that moment in time on rhythm with a square hip angle, he can only close on horizontal space, not vertical. So that is, in fact, an uncapped look. The other two hip angles are if the hips are turned to the sidelines, that's a man hip angle. That means he can close on outside space. If he has a zone hip angle, that means the hips are turned inside. He can close on inside space. So knowing the hip angle position and the definition of what those hips tell me, if I throw at that moment in time, I can now have a better information to know whether that route is capped or uncapped. But there's one more layer to the cap process. And this is the most important one to confirm if a route is in fact capped. It's personnel. That's what the P stands for. Personnel can trump a capped look. So for example, if I'm throwing the post out there, pre-snap, that corner is over and inside my X receiver. Post-snap, that corner has a full hip angle, so he's still capping the route. But I'm throwing to Julio Jones. All right.
I'm sorry. I have to chuckle there because that's exactly where I was going with this. And I love that you're explaining these. It's remarkable. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's remarkable how you're talking about, in some ways, kind of almost showing players what they should be perceiving on the field, the things they're supposed to be perceiving in a systematic way.
Yes. And I think a lot of coaches, they hear this and there's no way, that's just too much information. There's no way I can tell my quarterback how to process all these things in, 1 to 2 seconds. What they need to understand is that this process is used as a tool to lead that quarterback through his decision-making, after a game, after a play, on Saturdays when you're watching the film. It's not something that you're communicating, that he's thinking through each step as he drops back. What happens is you're just creating mental models. And this process and this language and this structure allows me to create a deeper mental model to coach a player through to inform whether his decision was the best or, in fact, was the wrong decision. And through creating those mental models, like tracing, fine lines on a detailed drawing, it allows me to accelerate that intuitive information live in a game. So it's not that my quarterback is thinking through each of these steps and he's processing all these defender movements of 3 or 4 defenders live in a game, but by tracing these mental models slowly on film, after practice, after a game, it allows him to accelerate that decision in real time during the game, if that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense. I mean, I actually interpret your work a little differently. I kind of see it as you're almost coaching sensitivities. So I think we're saying similar ideas, but we're getting then into the psychology of things, and that's not where we're going here. But more or less, I want to ask you this because I think you hit on a point there with talking about the player and the talent trumping, sometimes what the cap may or may not concede to us. And I want to talk to you about it because you said it. You said, he's not thinking about every step. These are things that are happening in the moment. He's directly connecting to this information as the play unfolds and as it emerges. So I want to ask you, as you're going into practice, as you're training your athletes, what are some of the key principles that sometimes coaches may forget about when they're really trying to get their players ready, specifically at the quarterback position, getting them ready for that Saturday or Sunday game, getting them ready for that night? How is it that we can create environments in our practices that maybe allow us to explore all those different circumstances? Because like you said, he's not going to have time to think through every step in a kind of a litigious, almost mechanical way. He's going to have that intuition, that feel, or, that sensitivity to those opportunities for action when he's out on the field. How do you go about kind of making this a part of your program or making this your program?
Yeah, I think it comes down to, like you said earlier, the non-negotiables. So the cap process, the dominant position of defender pre-snap, the hip angle post-snap, the personnel ability of your receiver versus that defender, those are non-negotiables that you have to work through mentally to determine if that route is in fact going to be open or not. And there's a few more non-negotiables that we look at. For example, as we come off the line of scrimmage, from a receiver standpoint, the quarterback's on his drop, there's cushion and collision. Those are two huge non-negotiables that you have to have the ability to process. And so if you can understand how the defense is trying to take your receivers and disrupt your timing from a passing perspective, then you can use those weapons they're using to take you out. You can use them against them. So, for example, if I'm a slot receiver saying I'm running a corner route, usually those interior, you know, or receivers are being defended by outside linebackers. They could be safeties rotating down. Usually they're trying to use collision to delay or disrupt route timing. And so as a quarterback, if I can understand, if I see collision, that's an accelerator to me to get off that route. That route is, in fact, destroyed. And it not only destroys the route, it destroys the stretch of the concept. So those little accelerators, those visual cues can help get me a step ahead mentally and a step ahead with my feet to know where the best next best route is within that progression. So collision is a huge non-negotiable accelerator that we teach in practice, like you said, or we look for in games. And once our quarterback knows that's the weapon that the defense is trying to use against him, he can use that as an accelerator to get to the next best route. Cushion is another accelerator that is used usually by outside receivers with defenders there. You know, the level of cushion a defender's maintaining is critical to know whether a vertical route is going to be capped or uncapped. So, for example, let's say we're running the post route again, and our receivers got to know they got to get within a certain number of yards of cushion to uncap that space. And the number is 4 yards. And this is based on many years of study. We found that if receivers can get within 4 yards of a defender vertically by the last step of the quarterback's drop, and the hip angle of that defender is square or just in the transition of turning, that vertical route is going to be uncapped. That's an accelerator. So our receivers are now armed with this information as well. So for example, if I'm a receiver and I know I'm on a vertical route, his mindset is I've got to have a great stance and start. I can't fall step. If I get within 4 yards of this defender by the last step of the quarterback's drop, I'm open. And that now allows your receivers. I mean, our receiver stance and starts overnight were phenomenal because they now understood that non-negotiable. Because every good receiver I've ever known wants the ball. Well, here's why you're not getting the ball. You're false stepping on your stance. You're not getting within 4 yards. Well, now that flipped the script. So now they're amazing at their stance and starts. Inside receivers, if they know collision is a weapon the defense is using to take them out, and they know that the quarterback is viewing collision, and they know that quarterback's not going to throw them the ball if they get collision, that receiver is going to do a much better job with his release strategies off the ball because he wants the football. And he knows, hey, if I get collision, Coach Maddox has told the quarterback, don't throw me the ball. So once they understand these non-negotiables, they now know how to defeat what the defense is doing. And I think that's some of the things you need to look for when you're coaching, you know, from an offensive perspective on how to get into space.
Well, I love a lot of things that you just brought up, man. There's so many ways that I can go with what you just said, because there's a lot of pieces to it that are so interesting. First of all, I love the idea. And tell me if this is fair, Coach. It seems like there's a cascading effect to once you establish this terminology, it also creates intention and attention for other players on the field. In other words, the variables, the things they're paying attention to are now in sync, so to speak, with that of other positional players. And it gives them almost a way of understanding when and where they're going to be in more successful positions than others. And it kind of gives them that idea of what their intention as a player can be. So wide receivers, it gives them this idea that, well, I got to get within 4 yards, and that's something that's going to be important for me. And that's something that they now have a guiding principle. But I do want to ask you about collisions, because there's so many ways we can go with cushion, collision, and all those different accelerators. If we were to look at collisions, take me on the practice field for a moment, if you don't mind. How do we begin to unpack collision and that accelerator within a practice? Because I'm sure people don't always have the same technique when they're collisioning, and they may be surprising in the way they collision players. How does that something that you're continually developing on the practice field? How do you begin to work through that with your quarterback?
Well, it comes down to different strategies to defeat collision. So once the receivers understand if I get collision, I'm not getting the ball, now we have to have strategies that we can use to defeat them. So what we did is we broke down the release strategy into 5 families. And so once the receiver has kind of a toolbox to use to defeat collision, he can now select the best release that's going to defeat that, because not all collision is the same. Sometimes, you know, linebackers or safeties that rotate down, they might play with an outside leverage and try to, you know, funnel you inside. Sometimes they're inside leverage and they're trying to collision you outside. Sometimes they're head up. Sometimes they're pressed. Sometimes they're playing soft and they're trying to catch and collision. So once they understand the different release strategies, they now have a definition on what strategy defeats that particular technique. they can now select it themselves and essentially correct themselves if, in fact, the collision does occur. And they now have a toolbox to use to defeat those. So that's kind of how we coach is we arm our quarterbacks and receivers with different tools with based on a family structure. And now they can select the right one, where before I would just say, hey, you know, you got to take a seam release. You got to take an outside release here. And they never knew the why behind that release. Well, now we've defined it. Now they know what it defeats and when to use it. And so that's really kind of how we coach is through that process.
No, and I what I like and what I'm hearing from you, Coach, and tell me if this is fair, by giving people a framework, you're almost enhancing their creativity too in other ways. Would that be fair? I mean, in other words, not every tool that they choose from their toolbox is going to be executed precisely in the same technical model that might have been shown, let's say, off the field in small group. But now on the field, at least they can creatively kind of have a like you said, a toolbox to choose from. So you're not sapping creativity necessarily from your players. You're just kind of giving them a framework to kind of work within.
Without a doubt. And I think that's where once you understand, I mean, there's only so many ways you can exit the line of scrimmage. There's only so many different drops you can do from a quarterback standpoint. But each one of those releases and drops has a different strength and it has a weakness. And once we define each of those and they understand the benefits that each gives, they can now get creative and select the best one. And I think just like if I'm cooking a meal, if I have a limited amount of ingredients, that's as many as I can have. And the different ways I use those and the order and how I use them and combine them, that's where the best chefs in the world, you know, are created. And the same as the best quarterbacks or receivers. You'll look at Aaron Rodgers on his drops. He's phenomenal at how he changes and adjusts his speed of drops, the number of steps in his drops. And it's all based on these indicators that we're talking about with cushion, with collision, with man technique, zone technique. And I think what we've done is we're able to now build a language in a workflow that allows a high school quarterback to get on an Aaron Rodgers level on how he adjusts things, you know, right before the snap. We have a language and a structure that allows them to get to where it took him years to get to just intuitively on his own through just years of experience and experimenting.
No, and that's what I think is so phenomenal. And I think that there's a lot of elements of this program that, I mean, listen, I've made no, you know, nothing shy about this, but I've said it before. I mean, I think that this is a very much a kind of almost like a Rosetta Stone of a way to talk about football. You know, it's non-specific, yet it is specific and it can be tailored to whatever you want to do, but yet it creates a framework that's, you know, easily to communicate. And I mean, Coach, just, you know, as I know your time is very valuable and I certainly don't want to, you know, monopolize it, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you at least a couple of questions about in terms of the future of R4 and where we're going. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be listeners out there. I mean, the amount of content you've already produced is outstanding. It's extremely in-depth and really, really well constructed. What is the future of R4 as we move forward into the future?
I think it's
give me your wish list, Coach. Give me your wish list.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah. I think from an offensive perspective, it's a operating system that allows you to run a holistic offense. And what I mean by that is when I learned the game of football as a young coach, I was basically confined to the offensive system that the head coach and the offensive coordinator was an expert in, if that makes sense. So, for example, we were a flex bone offense my first year. So we were confined by the principles of the flex bone offense. And then we went to a spread offense. And I really thought that was the best offense because we had a lot of success early on with the spread and the no huddle tempo. Because at that time, defenses were kind of trying to figure out, you know, how do we defend this? And then the defense is caught up. And then I went and coached a year in Florida and we ran the single wing offense. And I saw, you know, the advantages of the single wing. And then I went to Jinks High School and we were more of a pro style offense with a fullback and tight end. And I saw the advantage of that. So what I wanted to do was kind of to look at the DNA of football and the processes behind all these different offenses, these subsystems. And what I found was there was relationships with all of these different offenses. There was common themes and relationships within every one. And that's what I want to build, is a system that allows me year in and year out, specifically for the high school level, because our personnel changes drastically from year to year. So I need the ability some years, maybe I need to have some single wing, you know, concepts. Maybe other years I can do, you know, pro style or spread. So I wanted to be able to not be confined to one subsystem. I wanted to be able to broaden the spectrum and be able to teach my players the DNA of football. And when you can do that in a family structure and teach them the principles behind each of these concepts within across the board, it really opens you up to have your team be able to run multiple systems as one holistic system. So that's really kind of the goal for R4. It's an operating system for any offense. I didn't want to be confined to just Air Raid or West Coast or Pro Style. I wanted to have a system where I could go into a school or a program and teach them these concepts that allows them to accelerate decision-making within any offense. And once that's built, which it is now we can take the inverse of that and flip it and now do the same thing on defense, because really all R4 is, it's a pattern reading process. My goal is to teach my players how to pattern read and make the best decisions within schemes or concepts based on what they're seeing against the defense. And now what we're starting to do is take that same process and use it on the defensive side. And so the goal is to teach pattern recognition on the defensive side faster than the opposing offense is. And so really that's kind of the future, is now that we've built out the offensive framework, now let's flip it and let's do it for the defensive side.
I think that's fantastic, Coach. And I would even argue that your system is systemless. It's a systemless system. It kind of really celebrates that in a way, like you said, the DNA of the game itself. And I would even argue some of my experiences executing this system even showed that it helped accelerate the learning of the players. You know, it players became sensitive to different things that I wasn't even seeing. They were like, this particular player, his hips don't really move this way. This is what I kind of looked at, or I looked at this. And they were introducing me to other variables that they were connecting to. But the framework and the language being consistent had a more rich communication post-practice or post-drill. Because I kind of want to sit there and unpack a little bit, like, how did you feel? Did you feel? What did you see? What did you do? And I think the common communication really accelerated my understanding of my players and what their capabilities were. And it actually influenced the types of play calls I could make. Have you seen any of that yourself?
Yeah, I think that's the funnest parts of creating this are been now having players coming to the sideline or look at me right before the snap, and they are making the adjustments or getting the next best play call out before I can even say it. And that's really the goal, is I want to empower our coaches and our players to have everyone see the game collectively through a collective intelligence, if that makes sense. And the military found that out in 2004 and 5 in Fallujah when they were in Iraq. They had to change the dynamics of how they were fighting that war. And everything was fragmented. It was rooted in old methods and ways and strategies of doing things. And they were going against the enemy that was fighting in an unorthodox manner. So they had to create a whole new language. They had to have more transparency than they've ever had. And once they were able to tear those walls down and explain the whys and have a common language, they were able to adapt much faster than the enemy they were going against. And that's really what we want to create in the football realm, is this ability to adapt faster than the defense can. And you can only do that when you're working through the same frame of reference, you have a common language, and you understand the why behind every principle that you're using within your concepts.
For everybody out there, I've said it once and I'll say it again. The R4 system might be one of the best still kept secrets, ironically enough, in the world when it comes to this game, in terms of accelerating your understanding of the game, but also your understanding of your players and the understanding of the overall approach and joy of coaching. There's so much here to unpack, so much more. I wish I could keep Coach Maddox on for another couple of days. Unfortunately, he has life to attend to. But again, if you're interested, Coach, if we want to learn more about the R4 system, obviously your books are outstanding, and I would certainly recommend, I have recommended them to other people. But give me a blow-by-blow. How can we get involved in R4? How can we begin to at least unpack what may be useful for one another, or what you may use, what you may not want to use? But how can we become acquainted with the R4? Where can we find it?
Yeah, I think I would start, you know, if you want to start and just dip your toe in it, I would start with the books. You know, there's three books that have been written on it right now. Headset to Helmet was the first one, and we came out with that around 2010. And then the last two books I've written, I actually wrote two back to back. Adapt or Die was kind of the evolution of R4. And then the latest one is What is Open. And that goes into more of the game planning process and how we game plan with it and how we see the field and break it down and play call within the game. If you want a deep dive, what we created, since this is an evolving system and we're in, a lot of coaches are like, hey, I want to fly you out here. Can you know, I spend 2 days, and I'm like, 2 days ain't going to cut it. I mean, we can't get to all in 2 days. So we created an online platform. It's at r4footballsystem.com. And so currently I think there's 65 plus modules on there. And it's basically just an online platform that you can go and you can watch step-by-step a modular video structure that takes you through all the layers of R4. And it's currently, you know, we put out a new module every 2 or 3 weeks. And that's probably the best way to have a deep dive. It's basically an online master's course in football. And that's the highest recommendation I could give if you really want to deep dive and really learn this system and how it applies to the game.
Yeah, I mean, I purchased all of Coach Mattis's books. I am a subscriber to R4 as well. I can attest firsthand that the course itself was illuminating, to say the least. It was something where, you know, I didn't realize somebody out there in the world was looking for commonalities between all the different systems, kind of like I was, because I have books from like 1927. I was like, I got to go back to the beginning. I got to figure out where all this stuff came from. It can't be that there's all these systems. I got to figure it out. And sure enough, I trip on somebody like Coach Maddox, who's done it to that umpteenth level. It is a fantastic course. If you have any questions, you can reach out to myself. Coach, where can they kind of contact you? How can they reach out to you if they have any questions about anything? What can they do?
Yeah, I'm pretty interactive on Twitter. You can follow me at Coach Dub Maddox on Twitter. You can send me an email at dub.maddox@gmail.com. That's probably the two best ways to get a hold of me. We interact with coaches all the time, answer questions there. So would love to hear from you guys.
Well, Coach, I want to thank you on behalf of myself and my listeners for joining us today. It really has been an absolute deep dive into the problems, and the way in which you frame those problems, I think, is really unique. And I think there were so many rich takeaways from today's discussion that I know I'm going to be going back and listening to it a couple of times to unpack everything. So on behalf of myself and my listeners, Coach, thank you so much for being a guest on the Saturday Sunday Football Podcast.
Thanks for Matt. Love it.
So for everybody else out there, I appreciate your time and your listenership. And of course, we will be coming back to the summer seminar series soon. So stay tuned to your feed. Thank you so much for joining us. And please join me next time as we take you from Saturday to Sunday.